Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We cannot take it anymore. We are being exterminated in Gaza. We are dying, and no one is standing beside us, nor is anyone able to solve our issue.
Israel's deadly campaign of starvation and forced expulsion in northern Gaza has entered its 20th day. We'll go to Tel Aviv to speak with B'Tselem, the prominent Israeli human rights group, which has described Israel's siege as ethnic cleansing. Then we look at Israel's intensifying war on journalists in Gaza. We'll talk to the head of the Committee to Protect Journalists as Israel prevents two critically injured journalists from leaving Gaza for life-saving medical care. Israel's also accusing six Al Jazeera reporters of having ties to Palestinian militants without providing any evidence. We'll also go to Lebanon as Israel continues to bombard southern Beirut and other areas.
Us, like everyone else, we left Tyre and what's in it. We took the children, grabbed what we could, and fled. Suddenly, while we were sitting by the sea, we heard that our house had been destroyed. We came back and looked, and our house had collapsed, as you can see.
Finally, we'll go to Michigan to speak with a prominent Muslim Democrat, a former congressional candidate, who was removed Monday from a Kamala Harris event that he was invited to attend.
I was sitting there, then they called me and they kicked me out of the rally. And they didn't provide any reason why they kicked me out of the rally. I guess I don't know why, because maybe I'm Muslim.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. At least 17 Palestinians, including an 11-month-old baby, were killed today in Gaza's Nuseirat camp as Israel once again attacked a school-turned-shelter in central Deir al-Balah. In northern Gaza, Al Jazeera reports many civil defense rescue workers are refusing Israeli orders to evacuate, facing arrest and attacks as they continue their rescue missions, even as their capacity has been nearly wiped out by Israel's assault. Israel's siege on northern Gaza, now in its 20th day, has killed over 770 Palestinians. This is a displaced Palestinian woman who fled Beit Lahia.
I fled the intense bombardment in Beit Lahia. Martyrs and remains were all scattered on the ground. We do not know where to go. Truly, we don't know what state we have reached. We cannot take it anymore. We are being exterminated in Gaza. We are dying, and no one is standing beside us, nor is anyone able to solve our issue. We are innocent. We have nothing to do with everything that has happened. We are lost between a war and an extermination.
Al Jazeera has blasted Israel's dangerous escalation of its attack against the news network after the Israeli military claims six of its journalists are members of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Al Jazeera responded, quote, "These fabricated accusations are a blatant attempt to silence the few remaining journalists in the region, thereby obscuring the harsh realities of the war from audiences worldwide," they said. We'll speak with the head of the Committee to Protect Journalists later in the broadcast. Israel's continuing its assault on Lebanon, carrying out 17 attacks on Beirut's southern suburbs overnight, leveling at least six buildings. One strike destroyed the offices of the Lebanese news station Al Mayadeen. Israel also killed three Lebanese soldiers in a separate strike. Meanwhile, health authorities are warning of a possible cholera outbreak among Lebanese children amidst mass displacement, attacks on the health system, and lack of clean water and food. The 400,000 displaced children in Lebanon are also at risk of other highly transmissible diseases like hepatitis A and measles. In France, President Emmanuel Macron pledged a 100 million euro aid package for Lebanon as he opened a conference in Paris to rally support for Lebanon and reiterate calls for a ceasefire. We'll go to Beirut for the latest after headlines. Here in the United States, Jewish students across the country say college administrators have cracked down on their Gaza solidarity sukkahs, which have been set up over the past week to mark the holiday of Sukkot. In some cases, schools have destroyed the sukkah huts. Jewish Voice for Peace said in a statement, quote, "These universities desecrate these students' Jewish practice because their faith is intertwined with their solidarity with the Palestinian people. A university has no right to dictate what types of Jewish practice are legitimate," they said. Here in New York City, faith leaders and other activists disrupted a city council meeting Wednesday to demand council members take up a vote on a Gaza ceasefire resolution. Protesters cried out, "City Council, you can't hide, no more bombs for genocide," as they held up their hands covered in red paint while being forcibly removed by security. Over 100 city councils across the United States have passed ceasefire resolutions. In Spain, over 300 academics, entertainers, artists, including the directors Pedro Almodóvar and Isabel Coixet, have signed on to a letter calling on Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez to enact a full arms embargo against Israel, writing, quote, "As long as Spain maintains military relations with Israel, it will continue to be complicit in this massacre," unquote. Sanchez has said Spain halted its weapons trade with Israel since October of last year, but investigations have revealed some military exports have still gone ahead. Turkey's military launched dozens of airstrikes across northern Iraq and Syria Wednesday in what the Turkish Defense Ministry said were attacks on positions held by the Kurdish PKK militia. The strikes came hours after officials in Ankara blamed the PKK for setting off explosives at the state-run aerospace company TUSAS, then opening fire, killing at least five people and injuring 22 others. No group has claimed responsibility. Aid agencies in eastern Chad are warning of deteriorating conditions in overcrowded camps for more than half a million Sudanese refugees who fled fighting between rival military factions since the outbreak of war in April 2023. The conflicts have uprooted more than 11 million people across Sudan, with 26 million facing severe food insecurity. About 25,000 refugees from Sudan crossed into Chad in the first week of October alone. Those settling in refugee camps face poor living conditions, severe cuts to food rations, and few job prospects. Meanwhile, the UN says Sudan's warring factions continue to commit human rights violations, including possible war crimes and crimes against humanity. This is UN spokesperson Farhan Haq.
"We continue to receive reports of civilian casualties and indiscriminate attacks impacting public infrastructure and residential areas, both in North Darfur and elsewhere, with many areas effectively cut off from humanitarian assistance."
Kamala Harris's presidential campaign and allied groups raised $378 million in September, helping to break the record for the largest quarterly campaign fundraising haul in U.S. history. This, according to the new Federal Election Commission data. Major Harris donors include Facebook co-founder Dustin Moskovitz, Illinois billionaire Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker, and cryptocurrency billionaire Chris Larson. The New York Times reports billionaire Microsoft founder Bill Gates recently donated about $50 million to a nonprofit backing Harris. Michael Bloomberg also has spent tens of millions on the Harris campaign. Donald Trump's campaign reports it raised $160 million in September. That includes over $14 million from a handful of oil and gas industry executives coming after Trump told fossil fuel companies he would roll back environmental protections in exchange for $1 billion in campaign contributions. On Wednesday, Trump rallied supporters in Duluth, Georgia, where he was introduced by the far-right TV personality Tucker Carlson, who compared Trump to an angry father whose children deserve to be spanked.
"And when Dad gets home, you know what he says? You've been a bad girl. You've been a bad little girl, and you're getting a vigorous spanking right now."
Trump was later welcomed to the stage as the crowd chanted, "Daddy's home, Daddy's home." At the Georgia rally, Trump did not mention recent statements from his former chief of staff, retired Marine General John Kelly, who told the New York Times Trump made admiring comments about Adolf Hitler and would govern like a dictator if allowed. On Wednesday, Kamala Harris said she agrees with Kelly that Trump is a fascist.
Donald Trump is increasingly unhinged and unstable. And in a second term, people like John Kelly would not be there to be the guardrails against his propensities and his actions.
In other campaign news, the consumer advocacy watchdog Public Citizen filed a complaint with the Federal Election Commission on Wednesday over Elon Musk's $1 million daily giveaway to swing state voters. So far, at least four people, two in Pennsylvania and one in North Carolina, have received checks for $1 million. The Justice Department has reportedly sent a warning to Elon Musk's super PAC over the scheme. Meanwhile, the outlet The Lever reports Elon Musk could benefit from a massive tax benefit if Trump is reelected and appoints Musk to a government position. Trump has said he will create a new official role for Musk, Secretary of Cost Cutting. This comes as a new analysis from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy finds Kamala Harris's tax proposals would overall increase taxes for the top 1% and lower them for everyone else, while Trump's policies would cut taxes for the wealthiest 5% and raise them for everyone else. Donald Trump is facing a new accusation of sexual misconduct. Stacey Williams worked as a model in 1993 when she says Donald Trump repeatedly groped her at Trump Tower. She was introduced to Trump by the now-deceased serial sexual predator and trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Williams described the assault as a twisted game that had been orchestrated by Trump and Epstein. Trump's campaign denied the allegations. Boeing workers on the West Coast are extending their six-week-long strike after rejecting a proposed contract on Wednesday. Earlier in the day, Boeing reported a $6.1 billion loss. The deal, which was rejected by 64% of voters, included a 35% wage increase over 4 years. Striking workers are demanding a 40% raise and the reinstatement of their defined benefit pension plan. This is a Boeing machinist speaking ahead of the vote.
I think it's a decent contract, but I think it's not what we asked for. And I feel like the contract, it's not going to push the company forward for longevity in the long run. There's a lot of new hires that are struggling. I just feel like Boeing in this economy could do a lot better with all the money that we've made for them over the years.
A new study by Ohio State University finds the U.S. infant mortality rate spiked after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, with hundreds more babies dying after states moved to restrict or ban abortion access. The largest increase came among infants with congenital anomalies or birth defects. Researchers believe that's because pregnant people living under abortion bans can no longer terminate pregnancies when fetal anomalies are detected in utero. And Gustavo Gutierrez, the Peruvian priest known as the father of liberation theology, has died at the age of 96. Liberation theology holds that ending poverty and helping those in need is an essential mission of the church. In his seminal 1971 book, A Theology of Liberation, Gutierrez wrote that poverty is, quote, an attack on human dignity and therefore contrary to the will of God, unquote. The school of thought was popularized in Latin America through the 60s and 70s, despite pushback from the Vatican against liberation theology and its anchoring in Marxist principles. It continued to spread and played a role in political movements, including the Sandinista Revolution in Nicaragua. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. We begin today's show in Lebanon, where Israel continues to bombard the southern suburbs of Beirut. Health officials report Israel carried out at least 17 strikes overnight, leveling numerous buildings, including the offices of Al-Mayadeen, a Lebanese news station. Lebanon's national news agency described last night's attacks as the most violent in the area in recent weeks. Israel also killed three Lebanese soldiers in a strike in the southern part of the country. Israel continues to defy international calls for a ceasefire in Lebanon. This comes as French President Emmanuel Macron hosted an aid conference for Lebanon in Paris. Macron reiterated his call for a ceasefire and vowed to send over $100 million in humanitarian aid to Lebanon.
We go now to Beirut, Lebanon, where we're joined by Rima Majid. She's an assistant professor of sociology at the American University of Beirut. Thanks so much for being with us. If you can start off by talking about what's happening in one of the oldest cities in the world, in Tyre, in southern Lebanon.
Yes, thank you so much, Amy, for having me on the show again. What was happening yesterday was very, very disheartening, but it's really a crime of, of a global scale. Tyre is a very central city in terms of archaeology, of history, and this has been the second city. So Tyre is a city that is in the south and that is, inhabited by a large population. This is the second city in the south, large city in the south, that is being destructed in a systematic way. Yesterday, what we've reports say that the old ruins of Tyre have been hit by strikes. We have seen similar reports from other archaeological and historical sites, such as Baalbek, before. These are ruins that have survived thousands of years and that are being now destroyed by Israel. Unfortunately, we're not seeing the same alarm that we saw when other ruins, whether in Syria or Iraq, were targeted. And I think this is a very important issue to flag and to talk about.
So Rima Majid, can you say why you think these attacks on these ruins have not received the kind of attention they should? Has UNESCO, for example, at least made a comment?
I think the whole war on Lebanon is not receiving the attention that it needs to receive. I mean, there is a full-blown war that is taking very little space in the global media for several reasons. One of them is, unfortunately, wars in this part of the world has become material for consumption, and there's maybe a media fatigue, but also there's an impunity that Israel has been enjoying since a long time, but that has become very flagrant since last year, where at this point what we cover is, survival and bare life. There's so much to cover in terms of people, forced expulsions, people dying, that talking about ruins and history and archaeology is maybe seen not as a priority, but it's a devastating conflict, or it's a devastating war that is destroying all sorts of life and on this land, whether social life or even when we think about history.
Rima Majid, if you could respond to what we said earlier, which is that France has pledged over 100 million euros in support, humanitarian aid support to Lebanon, and in particular also comment on what the defense minister, the French defense minister, Sébastien Lecornu, said earlier this week on Monday, that quote, and this is a quote from him, our position, that is to say France's position, right now is primarily driven by the fear of an imminent civil war in Lebanon.
Sure. So on the question of humanitarian aid, I mean, France has just pledged today in the same conference in Paris. The UAE has also pledged, and I'm sure other countries will pledge money. Unfortunately, I mean, this is the hypocrisy of this global system. What we're getting, I mean, we've gotten to this point where humanitarianism has become really dehumanizing. The same countries that are sending, I mean, many of those countries that are sending us humanitarian aid are at the same time selling arms and sending arms to Israel to kill us. And the profit they make out of the arms industry is way bigger than what we get in terms of humanitarian aid. So in that sense, it's become really dehumanizing that we're turned into objects of humanitarian support that targets, again, just bare life. I mean, the aim now is for people to survive, to have shelter, even if it's not decent shelter, and know, just the basics of survival. We don't talk about social lives that have been disrupted, about you know, dreams that are gone, about plans that are now up in the air, about families that have been you know, that have lost loved ones or been displaced. So I think this is way bigger than anything humanitarian aid can solve. We saw last week when President Macron tried to insinuate that France should consider an arms embargo on Israel. I mean, we saw the backlash from Netanyahu and others. So I think you know, at this point, to me, this is really hypocritical. On the second point of the comment on a possible civil war in Lebanon, there's a lot of talk inside the country and outside, of course, about the possibility of sliding into a war, social tensions that are increasing because of the effects of displacement and tension in different neighborhoods. Lebanon is already a sectarianized country where, you know, these boundaries can shift quickly and can, you know, become very tense. But the point we don't talk about is that civil wars are not the result of social tension. I mean, we never slip into a civil war. Wars, whether civil or not, are political decisions. And therefore, the question today is, who is going to fund? I mean, yes, I'm not saying a war is impossible. Actually, it is very possible, a civil war. But the question is, who's going to fund it? Who's going to back it politically at the regional level and at the international level? Who's going to send arms? These are the questions that we need to answer. Rather than thinking that there's a, you know, that wars are social explosions. They're not. Revolutions are social explosions.
Earlier this week, at least 13 people, including a child, were killed and about 60 others injured in Israeli airstrike near the Rafik Hariri University Hospital, Lebanon's largest public medical center. At least 32 others were wounded in the attack, which caused major damage to the hospital. Separately, 50 medical workers and 15 patients were forced to evacuate from the Al-Sahel Hospital in southern Beirut Monday after Israel's military claimed without evidence its home to a secret underground Hezbollah bunker containing hundreds of millions of dollars in cash and gold. Doctors insisted there's nothing hidden beneath the hospital and took reporters on a tour of its lower floors to disprove the claims. This is Alex Rossi, international correspondent for Sky News.
This is the Al-Sahel Hospital on the outskirts of Dahir. Dahir, of course, is a stronghold of Hezbollah. Now, we're in the basement. This is, it's alleged by the Israelis that this hospital is being used by Hezbollah as a way of storing gold and cash. Now, we've been invited in here. This tour has been in no way exhaustive. You can see there are lots of other press here as well. But we haven't been controlled in terms of what we can film or where we can point our camera. We've been allowed to open doors, move around. Now, there may be other areas of the hospital that we've not been taken to, but for all, you know, this looks like a hospital.
That's Alex Rossi, again, international correspondent for Sky News. If you could respond, Rima Majed, to what happened there, and also talk about the U.S. State Department once again shoring up Israel and what it's doing. The spokesperson, Matt Miller, saying we've seen footage that's emerged over the course of the past 2 weeks of rockets and other military weapons held in civilian homes. So Israel does have a right to go after those legitimate targets.
Yes, I mean, the targeting of the Hariri Hospital was also very personal to me, because this is exactly where I grew up, actually. This is the neighborhood where I lived for several years. And it targeted civilians, mainly. All the other attacks are also targeting civilians. And this logic of, whether the German foreign minister's logic of Israel having the right to target civilians, and now there's a new logic of the right to target gold and money as a terrorist threat, is completely absurd. We've never seen, would this apply to Israel? Does Lebanon have the right to defend itself the way, using the same techniques and tactics that Israel uses? Of course not. I mean, this goes against every logic of protection of human rights, but also, I mean, just protection of, this protection of civilians is basic here. So I think what we're seeing is a complete degeneration into a war that has no rules, that respects no international conventions, and there's one side in this war that has complete impunity. We've seen this over the past year, and it's continuing. Israel is targeting civilians in most cases. What is the logic of targeting gold and money? If let's assume this is really what there is there, why target it with a bomb? What is the logic of this? This is just terrorism, and this is what it should be called.
And Rima Majid, if you could talk about the attacks, in fact, on financial associations, the branches of a financial association reportedly linked to Hezbollah earlier this week, in fact, on Sunday. What is the Al-Qarz Al-Hassan Association and why was it hit?
I mean, it's one of the financial institutions that are believed to be controlled by Hezbollah. It follows the same logic of, the neoliberal turn of, giving microfinance. So this is not an aid institution. This is a bank that gives microfinance facilities. What we have been seeing is that Israel is moving from the decapitation, which is continuing, of leaders, but there's also very clear targeting of Hezbollah's social institutions, whether hospitals, schools, banks, etc. So the aim is probably to dismantle, the target is not just Hezbollah as an organization, but it's also, its constituency, its people. And when I say it's people or its constituencies, it doesn't mean that these are Hezbollah fighters or members. These are just Lebanese civilians who have a political opinion that happens to be in support of that party. If we apply the logic on any other party, it would sound horrendous. The fact that we are justifying, hearing the German foreign minister who then, after saying what she said about, justifying the right of Israel to kill civilians, then visiting Beirut, is really, the world today feels like the turn of the 20th century, the dark years of fascism. And it's very alarming that this is how we're dealing with these wars, and this is the logic with which we're justifying the killing of some, but of course not others.
Majid, finally, we just have a minute left. If you could talk about Security Council Resolution 1701. Amos Hochstein, who was just in the region, has said its implementation is the only way to end the war between Israel and Hezbollah.
Yeah, Hochstein is, it's interesting that the negotiator is, served in the Israeli offense, the IOF, I would call it. Has a clear side in this war. Personally, I think this is a resolution that ended the 2006 war. At this point, I don't think any of the parties, whether it's Israel or Hezbollah, at this point, it doesn't matter what Hezbollah says. Even if Hezbollah today says that they want to stop this war and they agree on everything, including 1701, which they have agreed on several times. Just days before Nasrallah was killed, he had, agreed on the implementation of 1701. I think at this point, there's a plan that Israel will move on to implement, and that goes beyond what we're hearing from these diplomats. That is a plan that is in line with the Abraham Accords, with changing the face of the Middle East. And unfortunately, it's people like us who are paying the price.
Rima Majed, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Assistant Professor of Sociology at the American University of Beirut, speaking to us from Beirut, Lebanon. Coming up, Israel's deadly campaign of starvation and forced expulsion in northern Gaza has entered its 20th day. We'll go to Tel Aviv to speak with B'Tselem, the prominent Israeli human rights group which described Israel's siege as ethnic cleansing. Stay with us.